Is a return to the Iran nuclear deal imminent? Tehran has responded to the EU's plan to restore the 2015 accord. All sides are waiting for the US to reply. So what are the final hurdles to a new agreement? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Diplomats say they believe they're close to restoring the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Former President Donald Trump pulled the US out in 2018, but for the past 16 months, negotiators from Washington and Tehran have been working with the other signatories to re-establish the accord. The European Union laid down what it called its final offer earlier this month. Few details have been officially made public. Sources have told Al Jazeera the new deal will be rolled out in four phases over two 60-day periods. Sanctions on 17 banks and 150 economic institutions will be lifted. Iran will scale back its nuclear ambitions and be able to export 50 million barrels of oil a day. The EU's foreign policy chief says Tehran has given what he calls a reasonable response to the proposal. Josep Borrell says he expects the US to reply this week.
I understand this to be the point of equilibrium where neither one side nor the other can make things better. It was communicated to the participants of the negotiation, basically Iranians and North Americans, and everyone, British, Germans, French, Chinese and Russian. There was an Iranian response which I considered reasonable. It was transmitted to the United States. The US has not responded formally, but we are waiting for the response.
Well, Iran has accused the US of delaying its response.
We can talk about this round of talks being fruitful only when the Europeans announce that they've received a response by the Americans.
And Washington has denied stalling the talks. The State Department says Tehran appears to have dropped some of its demands, such as removing Iran's Revolutionary Guards from its list of terror organizations.
The president has been clear. He's been firm, he's been consistent, that he will not lift the terrorism designation on the IRGC. Iran's demand that we do so has been removed from the latest version of the text that we have seen. And that's part of the reason why a deal is closer now than it was 2 weeks ago. But the outcome of these ongoing discussions still remains uncertain, as gaps do remain.
So how did we get to this point? Well, in 2015, Iran and six world powers agreed to a historic deal. It limited Tehran's nuclear activities and allowed international inspectors to monitor its activities. In return, crippling economic sanctions on the country were lifted. Then in 2018, the US made a unilateral decision to withdraw from the accord under Donald Trump's leadership. Washington reimposed sanctions and Tehran retaliated by breaching uranium enrichment limits. In 2021, talks to revive the nuclear deal began in Vienna after Joe Biden succeeded Trump. Several rounds have taken place, but a deal has so far been evasive. Well, let's bring in our guests now. And in Tehran, we have Mohammed Morandi, advisor to the Iranian negotiation team in Vienna. In Berlin is Hamid Reza Azizi, visiting fellow at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs. And in Washington, D.C. is Alex Vatanka, senior fellow and founder of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute. A very warm welcome to all of you. Mohammed Morandi, let's start with you, because the signs are good, aren't they? Is there a workable proposal to revive the 2015 deal on the table?
Well, first of all, I have to point out that Iran did not withdraw any demand. And I think the Americans are trying to sell this at home. I've been saying this for months, that removing the guards from the U.S. Terrorist list is not something, was not a precondition. And I've said this often, people can check my interviews. I probably said it on Al Jazeera multiple times. So the statements coming from Washington don't make any sense. Iran will continue to have CENTCOM on its terrorist organization list. But yes, I do agree that a lot has been achieved over the past few months, and the Iranians were able to gain significant ground on all the different fronts, whether it's sanctions or whether it's it has to do with verification or sequencing and assurances. And the EU foreign policy chief, the statement that was quoted earlier on in the package, he says that the Iranian proposals or the Iranian points that they made in their response were reasonable. So obviously the ball is not only in the American court in the eyes of the Iranians, but the ball is in the American court according to the EU.
So just to be clear on that first point that you made, Mohammed, you're saying that the Iranians were never demanding that the Revolutionary Guards be taken off the terrorist list in the US before the deal could be revived?
Yes, the Iranians never demanded the Guards being removed from the so-called FTO list, the Foreign Terrorist Organization list. And anyone who doubts that, they can use a search engine, check my interviews, probably a few done on Al Jazeera, and on my Twitter account.
Alex, is that something that you can corroborate there from where you are in Washington, D.C.?
I don't know what Mr. Mirandi did on this issue over the last few months. I think the consensus here in Washington would certainly be that that was an issue the Iranians were pressing for hard. If I remember right, Kamal Kharazi, a very senior member of the Iranian regime, close to Ayatollah Khamenei, I believe it was a Doha forum, he made that point, that the Revolutionary Guards needed to be off the U.S. terrorism list. So, you know, I don't know exactly where different players were, but this was certainly a factor for a while, and it seems to not be a factor at the moment, at least.
Absolutely. I was going to say, regardless of the status, it seems to be a moot point because it appears that the Revolutionary Guards are not on the table anymore. Hamid Reza, how close do you think we are to getting the 2015 deal revived?
To my understanding, we are closer than any time before since the restart of the negotiations after Raisi took office. Because, you know, at some points we were actually witnessing kind of maximalist demands on the Iranian side, which was then somehow, you know, of course, was not accepted by the U.S. side. But as we've heard recently, you know, on issues like listing the IRGC or other points, I think Iran has made a lot of, you know, kind of, or better to say, a series of reasonable concessions. And that is the reason why Joseph Borrell, the EU foreign policy chief, has kind of called Iran's response reasonable. So at this moment, I think Borrell's statement was also important in the sense that he kind of indirectly mentioned that it's up to the United States now to decide, because whatever the European side could do, I think they have already done. And as it was mentioned before, it's kind of a final offer, taking into account the positions, the basic questions, positions of both sides. So that is, you know, now the situation. So it's really much up to the United States to come up with the response to the EU proposal as well.
Alex, it's generally accepted that the ball is now in the US's court, but is Biden stalling?
Look, Laura, we have to admit to a simple reality here. There's a lot of politics around this issue, both in Washington and in Tehran. In Tehran, President Raisi and his team want to give the Iranian public the impression that the deal that's about to be born maybe is so much better than Hassan Rouhani would have negotiated. This is part of Iranian factional politics, the so-called reformists and the so-called hardliners. Each want to be the national champions. They've been playing this game for months. In Washington, you know, the Democratic Party is not doing well. President Biden's approval rating is historic low. He can't afford to seem weak, not after the debacle in Afghanistan and all sorts of questions about his handling of foreign policy. So he's making sure that, you know, he doesn't look weak. A lot of Democrats in Congress are already on the fence, if not opposing this deal, because of political reasons. So unfortunately, politics in Washington and Tehran is just not helping this diplomatic process.
Mohammed, would you agree with that? Would you say that there's pressure in the political echelons of Tehran to present a better deal than Rouhani could have negotiated?
Look, I was on the... I was with Dr. Zarif in Vienna in 2015 during the whole period of the negotiations, the 3 weeks, and I was with the current team in Vienna during the whole period when they were negotiating. And it is very obvious to me that while both teams did their best, but for whatever reason, the Iranians have been able to gain enormous concessions this time around. And in fact, to correct a point that was previously made, Mr. Borrell spoke favorably about the points that the Iranians made, those which were linked to the so-called final text. In other words, the Iranians were saying this final text has deficiencies that have to be addressed. And Mr. Borrell, when he read and when they studied the Iranian proposals, he said that they were reasonable. So the United States had to give concessions. But the fact is that the concessions that the Iranians gained were all about implementing the JCPOA, nothing more than that. What the Americans want to do is have a JCPOA where they don't abide by their commitments in full, and the Iranians do so. And the Iranians are not going to have that again. When Obama signed the deal, he systematically violated the deal from day one. He was supposed to help facilitate the normalization of Iranian trade and business. And what he did in reality through the Treasury was threaten banks, financial institutions, shipping companies, insurance companies, big business, not to work with Iran. That was a clear violation of the deal. And then Trump tore up the deal. And Biden, despite criticizing Trump, he pursued Trump's maximum pressure policy, which was directed at ordinary Iranians. So the Iranians are looking at the past, at American violations, whereas we all know that the Iranians were abiding by their commitments. So this time around, the Iranians, they gained these concessions basically to make sure that the Americans, alongside the Iranians, abide by their commitments. Mm.
Hamid Reza, is one of those concessions that's been raised in the media, is one of those concessions that the U.S. will face a fine if a future president again reneges on the deal? Is that in this proposal?
As you know, what we have heard or seen in the media has been based on a leaked audio on the Iranian side. So there is no concrete detail on the European side, at least as far as I know. But based on my understanding, there might be some provisions like what you mentioned in terms of kind of at least a formal line or something like that as a compensation if the United States decides to withdraw again. But I seriously doubt that any kind of, guarantee or, compensation like that would be actually implementable because, there is a matter of whether and to what extent any kind of agreement, I mean, the deal itself would be binding, let alone the issue of compensation. So I think this is something more related to Iran's domestic politics, because at the end of the day, the Raisi team needs to sell the agreement to the public as something stronger than Rouhani. And this matter of this issue of guarantees has been something that they have been maneuvering on. And this might well, serve that purpose, I think. Mm.
Alex, you could understand the Iranians' lack of trust, given that the U.S. unilaterally pulled out of the former deal in 2018. But as Hamid Reza says, are there any guarantees that are workable within the U.S. political and legal system?
Look, the short answer to that is no American president can guarantee a deal permanent. I mean, you need to go through the Congress. You need to ratify a treaty to have that, state of course going forward, regardless of who is in the White House. Now, the Islamic Republic of Iran has very few friends in the United States Congress. And, and this is a point that goes back to what we heard just earlier in terms of U.S. intentions. Look, number one, it is a mistake. It's a folly and has been from day one to assume that you can have anything that's permanent. The Iranian side should have looked at the Biden term in office, and it might be a two-term president Biden, it might be a one-term president Biden, but there was a window of opportunity. And instead of working with Biden, the Iranians played politics with it quite a bit. I understand that they didn't want to fall into the same trap again. That's totally understandable. But they tried to pay or make Biden pay for the sins of Trump, if you will. And that was a mistake. There's still 2 years left. There's a lot that can be done, negotiated. And I think it's a strategic mistake on the part of the Islamic Republic of Iran to stick to the nuclear talks alone. What they need to do, and they should have done this from day one Biden came to the White House, is to broaden the conversation and admit to the fact that Iranian foreign policy would benefit from being more balanced, to talk to the West and not put all their eggs in the basket of the likes of Russia and China. This is a political ideological decision the Islamic Republic needs to make. If they do that, I think any deal that might be reached will have so much more likelihood to succeed beyond a Biden presidency. Mm. And if there's time, I'd like to talk about something else the US can do, but I'll leave that out for now.
Please, yeah, we will definitely give you more time in a moment. Mohammed, a lot of things to answer there in Alex's answer, but I also just want to put it to you whether the Iranian people might consider that Biden also made a mistake in missing the opportunity to renegotiate this deal in Rouhani's final last months in 2021. Might that have been an easier task?
Yes, the problem was that Biden wanted more than what he deserved. He wanted Iran to implement the deal in full, and he wanted the United States to gain added concessions. That was what Trump was after. So why would Iran resist Trump's excessive demands and appease Trump and then later on and refrain from appeasing Trump and then later on go and appease Biden? No, that would be ridiculous. Actually, what the Iranians have done at the negotiations, one thing that they did was that they created inherent insurances. In other words, if the United States doesn't live up to its obligations, the Iranians can very quickly return to enriching uranium at the pace that it is doing now. That makes the Americans pay a price for leaving the deal. The problem that we had under Obama, and Biden was his vice president, was that the United States didn't pay a price for violating the deal. The problem under Trump was that the United States didn't pay a price for leaving a deal. These negotiations were to ensure that the United States pays a price. And this is a good thing for the deal because it protects the deal. If both sides feel that staying in the deal is a better thing, it's good for the deal. One final point that I'd like to make, and that is that in 2015, when the deal was signed, the Iranian leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, said that if the United States abides by its commitments in good faith, other issues could be discussed. And then in that speech, he said, although I don't believe the United States will abide by its commitments in good faith, and he was absolutely correct. The United States wasted an opportunity. And why should the Iranians speak about other issues when the United States is not abiding by the commitments that it signed on to? So if the United States in future wants to start talking to the Iranians about multiple issues, first they have to show that they are reasonable in their with regards to their obligations in any future nuclear deal.
Ahmed Reza, how difficult has it been to try to keep this deal alive as you know, the EU member states, China, Russia, also trying to keep this deal going when you've got two very different sides who won't even sit at the same table during these particular negotiations?
Yeah, of course. You know, when you have the two sides that are not ready, at least one of them is not ready to directly negotiate with the other party, and you need to have both a party to the agreement and the negotiations, and also to play the role of a mediator. It's quite difficult, and this has been, to my understanding, one of the main reasons that it took so long for us to reach the point that we are, and this is still a kind of uncertain situation. Here, speaking of EU, I think we've witnessed a kind of very interesting change in EU's role because, what EU used to do before was to somehow play the role of mediator, more like a kind of messenger, I would say. That mediating role kind of reduced to the role of messenger between Iran and the United States. But since the Ukraine crisis, I think we've been witnessing a kind of increased role of the EU in terms of coming up with its own initiatives, like the proposal that that we saw. And of course, there's a few reasons, like you know, the potential for Iran to go back to the energy market, and its potential for you know, increasing its oil production if the sanctions are removed, and also the fact that the Europeans don't want a new war. You know, it's in Europe's close neighborhood. So these factors, I think, have contributed to a kind of more active role by the European Union. And without that, I don't think that we could reach the point that we are at the moment.
Absolutely. On the other side, Alex, we've got Israel looming large, doing what it can to stop the deal. Axios reporting just a few days ago that the Prime Minister, Yair Lapid, told the US to walk away from these talks. I mean, we know that Joe Biden is taking his time to respond. Is this because of Israel's leverage within the US?
Look, I say two things about the role of the Israelis in all of this. Number one is, just put yourself in the shoes of the Israelis. You're sitting there, a country of just under 10 million people, and you have Iran not far away, a country of 85 million, that has since 1979 vowed to destroy you. Anybody on a human level would have to sympathize with the fears that the Israelis have. Now, I'm not for a second defending what the Israelis are doing vis-a-vis the Palestinians and all sorts of other criticism you can put at the door of Israel. But on that existential threat, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and don't take my word for it, listen to the speeches of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who's been the supreme leader of the system since 1989.
Alex, I'm going to jump in. We've only got 3 minutes left. We know the antagonism between Israel and Iran. I just want to know how much Israel is stymieing the US responding to this deal.
Look, I think the Israelis really don't have much of a plan B here. The best thing Israel can do is help the United States. The Israelis don't have a military strike option against Iran. They know it. They would have done it a long time ago if they had it. So all Israel really should do is to support the United States in any way possible to make sure that Iran and the rest of the world come to an agreement in terms of Iran's nuclear program.
Okay, Mohammed, does Iran have a plan B if this deal is not revived?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Iran's opposition to Israel is like its opposition to apartheid South Africa. Iran wants this system, this racist regime to end, just like South Africa.
This is a whole other debate that we do have on Inside Story many times, so please let's stick to the nuclear deal.
Well, the Iranians, if the United States, at this point, when both the Europeans and the Iranians are saying that the ball is in the U.S. court, if the Americans are not reasonable, the Iranians will continue to expand their peaceful nuclear program. And also, we are closing in on winter. The weather is going to get very cold in Europe. The Europeans are going to suffer, and so is the United States. The price of energy is high. So if the United States wants to ease pressure on ordinary Europeans, instead of sacrificing them, they should listen to Joseph Borrell.
Okay, Ahmed Reza, you hear there that Iran will continue expanding what it calls its peaceful nuclear program. I mean, it has enriched uranium to 60%. It needs to be enriched to 90% for it to be a nuclear bomb. And we have had the Supreme Leader's senior advisor in July saying that Iran is technically capable of making a nuclear bomb. If this deal doesn't happen, how dangerous a situation is the region in?
Of course, we will witness an escalation of the tensions, especially between Iran and Israel, because, you know, of course, as your other guest mentioned, you know, there's not a lot of options that Israel has. But one option that it has been resorting to has been these you know, covert activities against Iran nuclear infrastructures, and an Iranian response would actually, you know, exacerbate the situation. But one very quick point, there's a kind of misunderstanding, I think, regarding the position of EU, because, you know, EU's energy needs is something quite you know, obvious. But then, if EU wanted to also, you know, ignore its red lines, they would have already reached an agreement with Russia itself, because, you know, this whole debate is about the very fact that the Europeans have their own red lines as well. So I don't think that, you know, Iran going further, you know, escalating at the regional level and also escalating in its nuclear program would be really helpful in getting more from the Europeans or the Americans.
Okay, a very interesting discussion indeed. We are going to have to leave it there for the moment, though. Mohamed Morandi, Hamid Reza Azizi and Alex Vatanka, thank you all very much for joining us. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, that's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.